In our new series, Hunger Strike, we took a look at how an extreme form of protest took a Southside school from the brink of closure to serving over 200 students 2 years later. I'm WGN's Domati Pungo. We invite you to check out the full, unedited, behind-the-scenes interviews with some of the key players. Let's take a listen. Your name and title for the record.
Sure. Howard Tolman, CEO of 1871.
And first of all, thank you for taking time to do this. CEO of 1871 doesn't even sum up all of the things that you do and have done. 1871, the tech hub incubator for, 500 companies or so?
Yep, 500 companies, about 2,000 people a day.
In a few sentences, let us know what 1871 does.
Well, first of all, I'm happy to be here, although I thought it was going to rain all day, so I'm less happy than, than I would have been if it wasn't beautiful outside. So. But that's okay. I'm still happy to be here. It's a tech incubator. We have put together in one place all the resources you need to start a business. So we've got the about 7 or 8 early stage venture funds. We've got the 500 companies, about 2,000 people a day, about 800 mentors who coach the companies and the entrepreneurs, incubators in a variety of different spaces, ed tech, food and retail and real estate, and then a focus also on Hispanic entrepreneurs and women entrepreneurs and veteran entrepreneurs, all of those. That's all part of the what's there. And then all the universities are there, 7 universities, and then a bunch of schools. And then we work internationally with about 12 countries where they send startups to Chicago for about a month usually. And then we have 3 accelerators. Techstars is one. Those are short-term folks that come in to sort of build their companies to the next level. And then we do our own innovation work and develop our own technologies as well.
That is awesome. And it's pretty young, 2014?
About 5 years. So we started in May of 2012. I started right at the end of 2013.
Got it.
Yeah.
And so you talk quite a bit about the rate at which businesses and companies grow and kind of scale, and how sometimes they the way we think about that is a bit simplistic. Is that how you would characterize it, or do you think about the way companies can change and grow in ways that are different than most CEOs and business leaders?
What I would say is nobody who's ever gone through the process believes it's a hockey stick, so it's not all straight up into the right.
Right.
It's a pretty bumpy process, and a lot of companies never get beyond a certain level. Our goal is to get companies up to a level where they can be acquired by a larger organization, or they can go out on their own, although it's very hard to build a company on your own these days. So, I think that everybody understands the process. I think the difference is having these hundreds of mentors and having 1,000 events a year, which are educational for the companies and provide an enormous amount of, connection and networking capabilities. These are calculated to make it a higher percentage likelihood that you'll be successful, that your business will come into 1871 and then grow.
Mm-hmm. And right now you're working with the entrepreneurship program at Dyett High School,
yeah,
which is actually why we're here. Tell us about their program and how long you've been doing it and why you even started this.
Well, so Beulah Beulah is the principal, and she came to 1871 and said, this is really interesting. And we got to talking, and I said to her that we would love to figure out how to find a group of ninth graders to teach to be entrepreneurs. We think entrepreneurial skills are really life skills. And so I wrote a little book on sort of for the ninth graders, although, it turns out that it's good for anybody. And we started the class. So we ran our first class for about 24 students, and I think they got a lot out of it. We certainly enjoyed it. We had a lot of partners. The space was designed by Barbara Pollock. Steelcase provided a lot of the furniture. It's an interactive classroom. It has monitors from Motorola. It has a lot of different resources and things. And we also got carpeting donated. We got other kinds of guidance and help from organizations in Chicago like Forward Space. And then we had a group of entrepreneurs who really paid for it all. And what was so nice about that is that that was a plan and a commitment on their part to give back and to really sort of help the next generation roll forward.
What is it that makes you so passionate about education? I mean, you could easily run your companies and continue to help entrepreneurs who are at that kind of startup phase, but you really have dialed back. Not only, you know, you worked at Tribeca, so you're teaching young adults, but you're teaching, you know, teenagers. You're really getting them started early, especially in a community like Washington Park, where they might not have access to the technology and even the equipment they get in the classroom. What is it that fueled your passion to do that?
Well, you know, I've been doing schools for about 10 years now. So I did Kendall College. That was a failing school up in Evanston that we moved down to Goose Island. And that was really high-end vocational in culinary and in hospitality. Tribeca Flashpoint College was about high-end vocational training and all the digital skills. And 1871 isn't so different. It's training in how to build a business. But the truth is, I think this is a really special moment in time where we can figure out how to get the kids interested again in school. And that's hard to do because most kids today would say the most boring place they go is school, which is really sad. But, you know, teaching kids to be entrepreneurs is very interesting right now. You know, the nobody wants to be the CEO of General Motors these days. They want to be Zuckerberg, or they want to be heading up Google or something like that. So that's good to start with. It's good that that kids don't only aspire. In fact, frankly, most of them don't aspire anymore to being Michael Jordan or being you know, a rock star, because those lives are tough. And, you know, you can be a jock for 5 or 6 years, and then maybe you won't be able to walk or you won't remember your name. So it's not the same path that it used to look like. But what I like is all the jocks and all the rock stars want to be entrepreneurs too now. And so it's coming our way. And, you know, it's cool. I say smart is the new handsome. I mean, it's cool to be in school and to learn these skills and to think about the business you want to start. No, so I'm hoping that that'll sort of excite these kids, and I'm also hoping the program will expand beyond diet, but diet was certainly the most exciting first opportunity because it's really a school that's been reborn, and having just the ninth graders was a great start. Now we'll have 10th graders and a new group of ninth graders, and the school is growing. So there's a lot of momentum around the program, which is really exciting.
And a lot of external momentum, like you talked about, like how jocks are going into, you know, entrepreneurship too. But I think rappers that they look up to, right? Like Jay-Z's last album, all he talked about was entrepreneurship.
Yeah, he used to say, "It's not about it. I'm not in the music business. I am the business." You know, and Jay, and you know, the guys who Jimmy Iovine, who just went over to with Dr. Dre over to Apple to do their music video, really. This is what's happening. I mean, tech is all about what it is today.
And you really understand this, too, at Tribeca, because I got a lot of friends who went to Tribeca. I almost went to Tribeca, yeah. Ended up going to the Illinois Media School. And as I was, you know, looking up stuff on you, I said, he understands this intersection between tech and the arts,
yeah.
Which, I mean, as soon as you work in music in any real way, if you're dealing with Pro Tools, you understand you're dealing with software, you're dealing with the program. So it's easy to see that marriage. Yeah. But for those kind of outside of that space, it's not as clear.
Well, also, I think that everything today, you know, it's funny, but everything today is about storytelling. And entrepreneurs are the best storytellers. They got to sell themselves. They got to sell their vision. They got to sell their story to investors. So learning to present yourself, this is why I say these aren't just business skills, these are life skills, because learning to present yourself and encourage and excite people is something you're going to do your whole life. And we want our kids to be really great at that.
Walk us through a classroom session with Mr. Tolman and these kids at Diet. What are you teaching?
So when we started, I mean, we had about 9 classes. And we focused on how do you tell a story, what goes into the story, how do you sell somebody something, how do you make a business plan. We took a business that was an 1871 business, and we had each of the groups of kids create their own version of that business. And then we brought an artist in, and he made logos for their businesses, and they got to stand up and present their businesses. And we did a few magic tricks, which we think was a sort of a break. And, you know, I think that when we all got done, they understood, you know, how to go after this stuff. And they're kids who are going to lean into opportunities, not be intimidated by them or sort of put off by them.
You talked about it pretty briefly early on, but how did you come to be a part of Diet specifically? Were you approached by someone?
Yeah, so I met Beulah, and I liked the idea that it was an art school. I liked the idea that it was a new school because it was really reimagined in many respects. It had, you know, it had a near-death experience, and to be able to be part of its new growth was very much like a startup. And Beulah is, you know, innovative and flexible, and the kids were excited to be there. You know, how many schools do you go to where all the kids want to be there? You know, this is another thing. So the fact that it was a really good group of kids who were motivated, and their parents who, you know, were part of the hunger strike, not all of them, but who were part of that whole situation, are committed parents. And so, you know, you got a lot of things that are going in the direction that make it a little easier than if you took on some, traditional CPS school with 1,000 students and all the issues associated with that.
Right, absolutely. You're thinking about expanding this program.
Yeah, I think Beulah has already been contacted by 3 or 4 other principals that want to do it this coming fall in their schools. So we're trying to figure out whether we're going to teach the teachers or whether we're going to just clone me or whether we're going to get some other entrepreneurs to come pick a school and go teach the curriculum there. So that's all stuff that we're discussing right now.
And at the time of this interview, you recently announced that you'll be retiring from 1871.
Yeah, at the end of the year, I'll have somebody succeeding me, and we're just started that search. And I think that's about the right time. I mean, I've been doing it 4 years. That's usually what I do, is 3 or 4 years. Sometimes it's a little longer than that, but generally, I think that 1871 has grown. It's number one in North America, probably number 2 or 3 in the world. Maybe it'll be number one this year. And, you know, President Clinton used to always say to me, the time to leave is when the cherry blossom trees are in full blossom. And so this is a good time to do a transition and to have somebody take it from this very good growth and take it to the next level, because it's global. Chicago is on the global technology map now. Everybody who comes to the city leaders, state leaders, world leaders, want to see 1871. They want to figure out what the secret sauce is. And it's also spawned a tremendous number of other incubators. So there's 10 or 15 different incubators of different sizes and different, you know, maturities and things. And then there's probably a zillion co-working spaces, which we don't really think are the same thing. But in terms of just the creation of additional incubators, it was really the driving force for the sort of the tech reimagining of the city.
So what do you think kind of happens when CEOs stick around past that blossom stage, like when the tree?
I think that, when your CEOs, you know, break into a bunch of different types. But I mean, if you're an entrepreneur, you want to build things. And, there's a phase of building when you get to 5 or 10 people, and a phase where you get to 50 people, and a phase where you get to 300 people. And, you know, my interest has always been in building and imagining and getting these companies to a certain size, but not then sticking around for the day-to-day managing. And I think, honestly, in most of the big companies in the U.S. now, the reason we're having trouble being innovative and bringing in these new technologies is, you know, a lot of these people are happy and they're sort of comfortable. And what they don't understand is that what used to work for them and that, you know, made them pretty happy and successful is not going to work for them in the future. It's going to be a different playing field, and they're going to have to figure out how to adapt. And my guess is most of them won't. Most of them will be replaced by people who are younger and more adaptable and really more connected to the technology.
Mm. And you said there are different types of CEOs, a different type of learners too.
Yeah.
What have you observed about some of the students that you taught? How can you tell? Is there something that you see where you're like, okay, this kid's going to be a great entrepreneur, and or this
you
one
know,
might
I don't
be,
think you
know.
I don't think that you can say somebody's going to be a great speaker. You can say somebody's going to be a great communicator, connector, somebody's got a great personality. But entrepreneurs come in all sizes and shapes and ages too. At 1871, we have plenty of people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, even 60s. So when I looked at the class, what was really interesting is over the 8 or 9 weeks, the different kids emerged. There were a couple of kids who were sort of sassy and right out there on day one, and then there were people that were quieter And over the course of the few weeks, they developed some confidence. And it turned out some of them were the ones who, you know, if we were betting on who was going to put something together that was really serious, some of the most quiet ones at the beginning who ended up being the ones that the rest of the people, sort of took a step back and listened to, that's about leadership. And so I would say of the 24 kids, you know, we were happy with 22 of the 24. And the only reason we weren't happy with the other two was basically they had so many other activities outside of class that they didn't, you know, they didn't have the time to really devote themselves to this class.
How were the 24 selected? How were these kids selected for the, and it's called the Eagle Entrepreneurship
Program. It's the Eagle, yeah. So the Eagle is the symbol or the mascot of the school. So that's where we got the name Eagle Entrepreneurs. And I also liked that the t-shirt worked out real well. So they were selected by the principal, and they were among the high achieving students. And they were also the students that wanted to do it. And now this year, they'll be mentors, and maybe there'll be a second-year class for them. They'll be mentors for the incoming ninth graders who will be taking the class as well.
And, you know, there was something I was watching, switching gears just a little bit, about one of your talks. I think it was at the City Club, it might have been. And you're talking about, it's really, really elementary, but when you hear people talk about technology, the simplest example of the purpose of it, you talk about how can we use technology to do something better, to make our lives easier.
Now that's half. How can we do something that we're doing now better? And then the other half is how can we do things that we never imagined that we could do? And that's the question that companies have to ask today, because just getting better is sort of what everybody is doing. And if that's all you're doing, you're not going to be leading and you're not going to be driving change. You're just going to be getting better, and everybody is going to be getting better.
Talk about one of the worst moments you've ever had in business and how it's kind of informed the way you move forward now.
You know, this is a, you know, I always say it was a really bad haircut, but, you know, listen, I've been really lucky. I mean, I've been doing this for 50 years, and most of our businesses have been very successful. And I think the hardest decisions, the hardest moments are about people. And the things that stick in my mind are the times when you have to say to somebody that they're not cutting it, that this position or this opportunity isn't right for them. And it's not because that their heart isn't in it. It's because they don't have the skills or they aren't gelling with the rest of the group. You know, so letting people go, which you have to do to be a good leader and to be a good manager, and also because if you don't, then you're not respecting the other people who are working hard and, you know, are creating results. That's the hardest thing. The hardest thing, without a doubt, is the people issues around people who aren't making it. And, you know, we try to coach people and we try to give them resources and give them additional education and training. But part of it is attitude. And some people just don't want to make the commitment or put in the time and the hard work that it takes to be successful.
So bringing that to the classroom, how do you kind of, those students who aren't performing at the level of their classmates, how do you inspire them?
You know, look, when we started the class at Diet, we had five, you know, principals, and, you know, they were preparation, perspiration, perseverance, principles, and passion. And you know what? If somebody wasn't cutting it, you know, we could pretty much sit down and say, here's which of those buckets aren't happening for you. You know, and if it's passion, then you don't belong in the class. Because if you don't want to be there, then we don't want you there. You're taking up somebody's seat that does want to be there. If it's preparation, it's like you're not doing your homework. You know, you're not getting ready. And that's disrespecting the other people in the class, because they came to learn and they came to participate. So if you didn't do your homework, if you didn't get prepared, and then if you don't work hard when you're there, and then, you know, some of them, it took two or three times to do some of the stuff. So if they're not willing to stick to it, if they don't persevere. So you know, it was really pretty straightforward. And look, CPS has all kinds of grading systems, and, you know, you're above proficient and you're this and you're that. You know, we were a lot more basic. It's like, you know, you got to want it, and the people who care the most are the people who are going to be successful, and we want people here who are excited about what we're doing, because we're here to help you. And if you don't want us to help you, or if you don't want to be helped, or if you're not interested, then it's pretty easy. You can, you know, you can go back and take advantage of some other opportunities.
And then just two more questions. How do we close the gap when it comes to access to these kinds of resources and communities like Washington Park? Programs like this one feel like a really good start.
Well, you know, we're talking about when we have speakers at 1871, you know, the city is wired now. The city has 220 libraries or something with video and schools with video. And we've been talking about how do we push out some of the amazing content that happens at 1871, webcasted or broadcasted to schools and resources all across the city. So that's one way that you get that. And then, the, you know, the other thing, this class is that you got to sometimes pick up and go do it. You know, I was just two nights ago with Reverend or Pastor Chris Harris, and he says, you know, don't say anything until you've done something, right? And so, you know, I'm happy that we're actually trying to do something, and then we can talk about how to get better. I mean, the people who are just sort of sitting around saying, wouldn't it be nice if things got better? Those aren't entrepreneurs anyway.
Mm-hmm. And then lastly, I talked about it a bit. You were able to create this inroads, I guess, between how the art world, the world of arts, even at Tribeca and even Kendall, this school is no different, about how it connects. Have you seen an intersection between the students' interests or things they're doing in their other classes and how it applies to what it is they do in the Eagle Entrepreneurship
Yeah,
program?
I think I asked Beulah about that, and I think she says that they're seeing the other teachers, and her observations are that this class helped them get a little bit more on purpose, a little bit more connected, paying a little more attention. You know, they've got some new tools to use in those other classes. So I think, you know, I think that our kids are going to stand out. I mean, that's the goal, is that you want to build leaders and people who can be successful. So, you know, look, the arts are no different. It's not, art is not optional. You know, I mean, so we have tremendous amount of paintings and things. We just had J.C. Rivera come and do a big mural at 1871. We got Hebrew Brantley stuff flying around the place. So we're trying to connect the digital world to the art world, too, and that's important because those kinds of inspirations are really part of what creates the passion. You know, you have to want to make something that makes a difference. And, you know, artists are all about making a difference and making a statement. And so that's why we think that art is going to be central to everything that we do.
And at its best, where do you see this program in 5, 10, 20 years?
You know, I mean, by that time, some of the people that have gone through it ought to be at 1871, you know, kicking butt. That would be enough. That would be enough.